This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. Well, we've been busy traveling in the 3 weeks since the last show. And where have we been? We've been to the Midwest. And between everybody here on the show tonight, we visited 6 different states and 27 different breweries throughout the Midwest. And we brought back plenty of beer to try tonight. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Britton Miner, Joel Miner, Steve Williamson, and from Pasadena, Jeff Miller, Hugo Padilla, and Lance Burks. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hey.
Howdy.
One of the biggest crowds we've ever had on a podcast, and we're going to break this into two parts. We have so much beer to try that it's impossible to just do it on one show. So we're going to do split up the trip into two separate episodes here, and we'll start off with the first state that we visited, which was Minnesota. Jeff, Hugo, Lance, and I flew into Minneapolis, and I arrived about an hour and a half before they did. And so, not wanting to waste any time, I jumped on an Uber and told them to take me to the best brewery in town, and they took me to Steel Toe. So about a half hour ride from the airport, $23. And then I was sitting in the corner of the brewery there, and it was pretty cool. There was a lot of people watching the hockey game, and very laid back atmosphere. Just a couple of people working the bar, but there was a steady stream of people coming in the whole time doing growler fills. Probably as many people coming on bicycles as there was in cars. Big bicyclist bar. They had a huge bike rack out front, outdoor seating, people enjoying one of the best days of the year that they have weather-wise in Minneapolis. And I tried 3 of the different beers they had. Their red IPA, I tried their English bitter, and then I also tried the size 7 IPA, which Jeff and Lance and Hugo have to try tonight. This was by far the most popular beer that they were filling growlers with. I'd say probably at least 70% of the people that walked through that door were filling up their growler with size 7. So it was a really enjoyable experience for a first brewery, just while I was killing time waiting for these guys to fly in.
So we're drinking this beer now, and yeah, we were not able to go to the brewery, but you know, this looks like a really nice beer. I mean, the clarity on this is incredible. It's one of the clearest beers I've ever seen. Sort of a golden amber color. Good, kind of thick, foamy head.
I like the idea of breweries kind of being like the way the old butcher place used to be. We had to go in and get your fresh supplies for the day and go in there and fill in your growler. I like that move a lot, where you're grabbing your beer and you're drinking that growler that night or the next day, and you just got to go back later on the week and get some more.
Yeah, we went to several grocery stores and stuff in Minneapolis, and they had it there at the grocery store, you know, in several places. But this is a brewery for the locals.
I love that.
You could really tell that, get that impression just sitting in there.
So this beer, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's a unique flavor to this. I mean, there's a little bit of citrus, a little bit of tropical fruit. It's pretty bold. I mean, it's 7%, 77 IBUs. It's not a light IPA. I mean, it's very, you know, pretty hoppy. Mm-hmm. But there's like an interesting, at first I thought it was like a soy sauce taste. It might be like umami. Very unique for an IPA.
Did you clean out your glass after the last show?
We did. That strange brew from New Zealand?
Yeah.
Yeah, the umami monster.
I saw Jeff write down soy sauce, and now I can't get it out of my head. Because that's the note that I keep getting.
So as I recall, I was impressed by how West Coast this kind of was. You know, you don't know what to expect going to a new place and trying beer in a city for the first time. And I kind of thought that if they just had dropped this beer off in California, that people wouldn't really think twice about it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's pretty West Coast in style, but there's a fair amount of malts. I mean, I think it's maltier than most of the beers we would have in California, at least from the IPA style. I mean, it's well balanced. It's a quality beer.
I think it's a lot hoppier than a lot of the different beers that we had out in the Midwest, especially them having so many pale ales. I really enjoyed not this beer, but another beer that we had at Blue Door with the Juicy Lucy's. I thought they put out really good food there, and this beer went perfect with it.
Agreed. So then our next stop was Surly, and this was the next day, our first stop of the second day. And we had arranged to take a tour there with a guy named Jeff, who runs the warehouse at Surly, big brewery. Yeah.
So this worked out really well because Jeff Krenner is somebody, he works at Surly, and we actually met him in California a few months ago at the Melvin Tap Takeover at Beechwood. And so we, you know, became friends with him and contacted him ahead of time, and he, you know, gave us the VIP tour. We had lunch with them. They have a huge restaurant at Surly. I mean, they have tons of space for food and really, you know, phenomenal food. But he just, you know, took 2 hours out of his day to spend with us and show us the place. So props to Jeff. We had a great time and really saw a lot of behind the scenes stuff going on at Surly.
Yeah. Throughout this trip, we went to a lot of breweries, big and small. And this one was on the bigger side. It kind of reminds me of a lot of, like, when we were in St. Louis, they had Schlafly, huge brewery, but really it only distributes to that city. So it's like Surly, we've never had a Surly beer here. I haven't anyway. I've never seen it any way to get it. It's not on Tavor or anything like that. So I didn't really know what to expect, but they are a, I guess on the global stage, a medium-sized brewery, but maybe top 50.
Yeah, I think they're the third biggest in Minnesota, third or fourth.
Yeah, so
production-wise.
But their brewery is huge and really well put together. Like they, I guess this is their second attempt at a, and it's a fairly new brewery location. So usually a brewery starts out, they kind of grow organically, and then once they make it big, then they build their humongous new brewery that has everything designed exactly how they'd want it to be done.
Well, let's open this one up and try it, because this is one we had on tap at the brewery, so we brought these cans back. If I recall, it was one of the better beers. I mean, all of their beers are good, but this is one of my favorites from that location.
Mine too. I think this was the first, maybe the first one I had or the second one I had at lunch there. Really good food at their restaurant. And then upstairs, they have a whole nother restaurant that is, they have a chef that makes specific pairings for different beers. So that if you're ever in that area and want to check that out, it was pretty good too.
Well, this pours really light.
It's like a little bit cloudier of a Bud Light.
Yeah, and it's only 4.5. It's only 4.5%, but I think it has a little more flavor than you would expect from a beer this low of alcohol.
Great aroma.
Yeah, it does smell really
amazing.
Good.
What is that aroma? A little like grapefruit or lemon pith or something?
I think you're spot on with the grapefruit for sure, and a little bit hoppy, but not overly so. Just pleasantly hoppy.
Yeah, the Citra hops. I mean, it's lemon, grapefruit, orange.
I initially thought a little bit of like pine or something, but then, yeah, as soon as Dal said grapefruit, I think that pretty much nailed it.
So it's very light colored. I don't know if we said that. You know, it's fairly translucent, but a pretty light golden yellow color with a very white fizzy head, little bubbly.
Yeah, it's pretty fizzy, and then it totally goes away except for just like a couple coarse bubbles that are left over.
The crisp mouthfeel, the small little carbonation bubbles really does make it very drinkable. Low hop, low bitterness. I mean, maybe I won't say low hop, but low bitterness. It kind of reminds me of like a squirt soda, you know, kind of how it has kind of has that very tropical citrus type of taste and kind of bubbly and sits on the tongue.
I like this a lot. The only thing that I would say that hasn't already been said is that on my first sip, I thought it was a little bit thin and a little bit watery. Like it's not a super concentrated flavor, but that's not a bad thing.
This is a beer that I think of as more like a session IPA.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pale ale, but I think a good pale ale to me has the hop profile of an IPA. And I think there's a good amount of hops here, but it doesn't have, you know, it's light bodied still. And so I don't know if, you know, breweries don't always use the term, but I would call this like a session IPA.
I remember having this at the brewery at lunch and it was perfect with the Brussels sprouts with the fish sauce on it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of an interesting take on Brussels sprouts, but this beer went perfect with it. The citrus just cut through that pungent fish taste.
Wait, so is it just a session PA?
Session PA. That's very good.
So, you know, we went to other breweries. I was going to say, we went to a few other breweries in Minneapolis too. I mean, we don't have, we have one more beer to have after this, but there's a few stops we made in between that I think we should go over a few of those places.
Indeed.
Indeed, ironically, is one of the breweries we went to. So we went to a bunch of places. I mean, I don't think we need to mention all of them, but Indeed was a really nice brewery in Minneapolis. I think all of us, our favorite beer there was a Brett Saison called Heliotropic, which is not the style that I think we normally gravitate to. It was delicious. I mean, we did a taster of everything, and then we went back and had, we each had a glass of this Heliotropic afterwards. It was that good.
I agree. We went to, what was the other ones we went to?
We went to Modest. Was our first stop with the whole group was at Modest. They had a very good New England style, Northeast style pale ale. That was probably the favorite there. Inbound, which was down the street from Fulton. Inbound was good because I think the ambiance there was something we all enjoyed. I mean, it was a new location, and I think we all just really thought, like, if we ever owned a brewery, this is a great way to create a tasting room.
And is Hugo going to do a recap of all the food pairings he had with every single brewery? No, that's good. I like that.
We tried to go to Fulton. They closed at 6 o'clock. It seems a little early to be closing a brewery. So
yeah.
How many breweries did you guys go to?
22, I think, on the whole trip.
Damn, that's a lot.
We average about 5 a day.
You guys went to 11 more breweries than we did. Sorry, 11 times more breweries.
So out of all of the breweries that you went to, how many beers do you think you guys tried collectively between all of you, all the different beers, all the different breweries?
We had a lot, but but I mean, at some places we only had one beer. I mean, we're pretty good about, you know, if four of us go in, we'll either get tasters and small tastings, or maybe we'll have four different beers that we each get one of. And so we try a good representation of the beers from a brewery.
It's hard when you're at work and you tell your friends, oh, I've probably had like 1,000 different beers in the last year and a half. Like instantly everybody's like, hey, we have an employee assistance program that helps you through like being an alcoholic. Cause if you tell someone that you've had 1,000 different beers in the last year and a half, there's instant like, oh, okay, bud.
There's instant judgment cause they're doing the math.
Yeah, I know.
They're like, wait a minute.
Well, it's tough because you want to try everything. And some of these places have 20 plus different beers on tap.
Yeah.
So you go up and you say, you know, I want a taster of everything. So share it amongst four people. It's not that bad, right?
Yeah, that's true. But then you go to 5 breweries in a day, and by the fourth and fifth one, you know, the recap isn't as good on those. But one that we do remember very well was Fair State. This was a brewery on the like northeast side of town, right?
Sorry, I just opened this and it was spewing out a little bit.
Sorry, that happens sometimes.
I hate it when that happens.
I'm excited about this brewery and also the beer that you guys have chosen for us to try.
Yeah, this was so good. So this was one of our favorite stops for sure, overall experience. And this beer was excellent. So we had a bottle of this at the brewery with one of the owners. You know, he gave us the VIP tour. His name's Matt. Very cool guy. You know, he found out who we were. He was just sitting there doing some work, and he showed us around.
We didn't know he was an owner, though. So we were sitting at the bar trying some beer out, and then the guy that was behind the bar pouring beers, this other guy that was sitting at the table there started, like, coming up and yelling at him and stuff and making fun of his hat. I was like, oh, who's this guy? And then he walks behind the bar, and it turns out he's one of the owners of it. And so he started talking to us, and then he gave us the grand tour.
Yeah, super energetic, nice guy. And yeah, he gave us the tour, and he's like, well, let's open a bottle of this. And so we shared this bottle, and it was so good. I mean, so we each brought back a bottle of this. It's a Mosaic Sour. This beer is 5.3%, 25 IBUs. I think it's made exclusively with Mosaic hops.
I think Britton mentioned it before the show, but it is a great label. I mean, it looks like something you'd see in the 70s show.
I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty
great
cool.
Great branding. This pour is even lighter than the last beer, I would say. It's like a very pale yellow.
I'd say it could be lemonade almost. I mean,
because it's hazy too.
Yeah.
What about that aroma?
It smells fantastic. It's like a super reserved light funkiness, which is what I love. So I'm excited to try this. Maybe a little lemon.
It's a pretty hazy beer too. I mean, Britta mentioned the color, but it's pretty hazy with a lot of head. I mean, it's a pretty highly carbonated beer and this big white fluffy head.
Ooh, that's, the first sip was real sour, but it smoothed out real quick. Though. I mean, it got even a little sweet at the end.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
The Mosaic hops come through really strong. I mean, it's a very unique hop flavor. I mean, it's very distinguishable as Mosaic. And I think that Mosaic hops really do well with the sour. It works well with sours.
That's absolutely what I was going to say, because when was it? A couple shows ago, we had quite a few Mosaic beers and I didn't like any of them and was just like, okay, I guess I'm not a Mosaic hop fan. This is fantastic. And I think that the sour actually mellows out the hop a little bit. And like Steve said earlier, it finishes off like very smoothly.
And when we were there, so they make this and then they make another one. Was it with Simcoe?
Mm-hmm.
So we had both of those, and you know, we have limited space when we bring beer back. So we thought this was the better of the two. I think they were both very tasty, but we chose this one to bring back just based on the taste that we had there at the brewery.
It's such a strange sensation for me that, you know, someone who has found that I enjoy sour beers, I've never come across this before where you get, it's really sour up front. And then there is no lingering sourness to this at all. It's like it somehow just all evaporates on the back of your throat and it just finishes so clean and crisp. Like, I mean, like, you know, you could have sip after sip after sip and sip and you don't feel like you have that sour mouth. You know, it's very impressive.
I agree. Usually you get that kick in your molars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That comes through, you know, you're drinking sour, but kind of just levels off right before that happens.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fairly mellow sour. I mean, I don't think any of us are huge fans of the really sour beers. Mm. And this is, you know, I don't want to call it like an introductory sour, but it's on the lighter side of a sour beer. And for a lot of us, I think that appeals to us when we're getting into the sour area.
So for me, I have a hard time towing the line between tart and sour. Like, when does tart become sour? And I would actually say that this beer is more sour than tart, but it, like Jeff said, it's a very reserved sour and it's like an introductory sour. It's pretty easy to drink.
There's a couple times I've had like high end mimosas with really good champagne. This has a really good quality mimosa taste to it without the sweetness that is often associated with mimosa. Like, I am loving this beer.
I could totally go for that. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, sours, a lot of times they don't resemble a beer. They resemble some type of fruit juice concoction with sourness in it.
Yeah.
This maintains a beer quality because that Mosaic hop quality is so so strong that it's like you're drinking a lighter IPA that has sour qualities to it.
And the mouthfeel on this beer is amazing. I mean,
yeah.
Just every sip of this, I mean, just the texture, and I mean, it's a little dry that I appreciate it accentuates the flavors, This is just an excellent overall beer.
Yeah.
Joel mentioned the mimosa part and the sweetness, and that got me to thinking, like, this beer isn't very sweet, but it's also very balanced. Like, you're not missing any sweetness. It's there. But it's, I don't know what else to say other than I'm like super surprised by it, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Very, very well done.
So it was kind of a interesting contrast between Surly, the big brewery in Minneapolis, and then a couple of breweries later, we go to Fair State, which is still on the very small side. It basically doesn't really distribute too much. I mean, they distribute at some liquor stores and stuff right around town, but they don't have major distribution. Everything is brewed right in their bar, which is in a strip mall kind of thing. Not a strip mall, but just on a downtown street. And then everything's in the basement. So you go down to the basement and there's all these rooms and, oh yeah, we rented the place next door so we could add in this. And then they got this room for one of their people is like a microbiologist, and there's all these like microscopes and lab equipment down there. It's like the mad scientist lab. And it's all, just whatever space they have expanded into it, and it's like organically growing.
That was cool. I mean, being from California, that's something you don't see too often. We're in the brewery. They only have a couple tanks. I mean, it's a small place. And you go below ground, and you kept going down to this basement level, and then it's another level lower. There's like two levels of basements where they keep all their barrels. And that was pretty cool because the temperature is obviously much cooler. And that's just something you don't see at breweries that we go to in California.
Yeah, definitely a cool experience. And the beer speaks for itself. So then we spent 2 days in Minneapolis, and then it was time to hit the road and head down to the next stop. But on the way out of town, we hit one more Minneapolis brewery, and that was Forager. And this was a really interesting place that's worth mentioning. Jeff brought back a crowler from them, but I didn't have room to bring it back. But a lot of good beers there, but they have a restaurant too. But just what's cool about them is the ambiance of their place. It's basically everything is built from things that they have foraged or scrounged from around town.
I love it.
Like the tap handles. One is a screwdriver that they have, welded into the thing, and one is some other, there's a socket wrench, and one is some piece of wrought iron that someone's grandma had or something. There's like all these different things, but like the bar is made out of stuff. They made the tables themselves. They put pennies on all the tables and then lacquered it so it's like clear on top, but you see all the pennies, and then you can hold your beer up into it and see what shade of copper it is. That was useful.
1946.
Yeah.
And they had a couple of hazy IPAs, a hazy pale ale, a hazy IPA. It was in Rochester, Minnesota. I don't know if we mentioned that. It was like halfway on our drive leaving Minneapolis to Decorah, Iowa. So we made a good stop, had some tasty beers, had some pizza that was awesome too. So there's your beer food pairing. But it was a cool place. Highly recommended.
And those of you guys who don't know, Jeff has hit a lot of states and is traveling. Did you hit any new state that you haven't been to before?
No, I've been to all these before, but it's different to spend time and go to these breweries. I think when we were on the trip, so I've been to 49 states.
What are you missing? Alaska?
Alaska.
Yeah.
But on the trip, we tried to figure out how many states have I had a beer in, which has only been for the last, 15 years or so. And the list is a lot smaller, so maybe 15 states. But it was nice to have a beer in some of these states that I've never had a beer there before.
One of the interesting beers that they had there that I've never even heard of was an Imperial Berliner Weisse with hibiscus. It was an 8% Berliner Weisse, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty high alcohol for that style.
Hey, Dallas, do you remember? Oh.
Dallas, do I remember what?
What the moose's name was.
I thought it was Daniel.
Daniel.
Yeah, they had a moose Daniel on the was on the wall that had been shot in 1904.
And in Canada.
He was a little dusty, but he was still hanging in there. Literally.
Hanging in there.
All right, well, that concludes the first state of the trip, and we have many, many more to go. Coming up next, we talk about our trip to Toppling Goliath in Decorah, Iowa, and the grand tour we took there. That and much more when we come back right here on the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, if you enjoy this podcast and the Beer of the Day website and want to know how you can support us, you can do so by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website. We have a banner at the very top of the site that says support Beer of the Day by shopping on Amazon. If you click that, or you go to amazon.beeroftheday.com, it'll just redirect you straight to Amazon. You do your regular shopping, and then we get a little percentage of what you spend. It does not cost you anything more. The prices don't go up. It's the same old Amazon as you're used to, but we get a little bit of commission, and that helps us pay for everything that we use on this show and on the website. That's the web hosting, our email service that we use to send out the Beer of the Day emails each day, our SMS service where we send a text message with the Beer of the Day to your phone. There's all the beers that we have on the show, and all the podcasting equipment. There's a ton of expenses. And by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website, you help us out a lot. For example, just today, somebody bought Hill's Science Diet Jerky Dog Treat Bag, 7.1 ounces. Apparently, one of our listeners has a fat dog that needs diet jerky treats.
That was for me, actually. It's cheaper than buying a regular beef jerky.
So, from that purchase, we received 24 cents, and we're going to take that 24 cents and put it towards beer on a future program. So, thank you very much for that. Also, you can help us by telling a friend about our show. We are a relatively new podcast. This is only our 32nd episode, not even a full year yet. And we grow by you letting your beer drinking friends know about us. So if you have a friend that likes craft beer, show them how to download the podcast on their phone or just send them the link to beerofthedaypodcast.com, and that's going to help us out as well. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. The next stop on our trip was Toppling Goliath. And this is one that I think we were all looking forward to trying. Of all the beers and all the breweries we visited during the trip, there was maybe only a couple different ones that we had before. And Pseudo Sue from Toppling Goliath is one that they had on Tavor, and we were able to try that a couple different times. So we liked Pseudo Sue. It's got a good reputation as being one of the better beers out there, better pale ales out there. Well, we tried that there, and it was quite good, but we decided to bring back the mother or whatever, the father of Pseudo Sue, King Sue. This is the double IPA.
It's cloudy.
Very cloudy.
It's kind of an orange color.
Is this supposed to be a hazy IPA or double IPA?
I would say so.
Doble.
But I don't think they market it as a Northeast style IPA.
It just happens to be a little hazy.
Speaking of mimosas, it looks like a mimosa. That's like the exact color that it is.
The interesting thing to that point is that some people have compared them to the Northeast style, even though they were doing this Northeast style before the Northeast style was that thing. They've been doing this kind of type of beer for something like 6 or 7 years. So the fact that people make that comparison, you will get a little of those same qualities.
Really inviting aroma, like tropical fruit, hops, a little citrus. I mean, you smell that beer and it makes you want to drink it.
There's some mango or something going on, some type of tropical fruit.
It's pretty reserved, though. I think especially for a double IPA. I mean, in my experience, usually I don't drink a lot of double IPAs, but it's usually the aroma's jumping out of the glass at you. You have to kind of dig down for this one, I think, a little bit.
And now that you mention it, like that made me think the color of this is pretty light for a double IPA. I mean, a lot of double IPAs we drink are a little darker, a little redder. This is very light in color for a double IPA.
There's something about the aroma that is making my nostrils twinge, and it's like, I wouldn't go as far as to say it smells like ammonia, but it has like a bite in the aroma that really like tickles your nostrils.
Well, it is. What's the ABV on this?
I think it's 8%. They don't put it on the bottles, but I think it's 8%. Okay. Ooh, I just had a taste.
So did I. My goodness, the mouthfeel and the bitterness hits you so quick, and it's like it tingles your tongue but doesn't last too long. Well, no, actually it does. But it is amazing mouthfeel. The sugar coats your mouth, and it is a fantastic IPA.
It's a lot sweeter than I would have expected, even almost sugary, even almost like the bottom of the Kool-Aid container where like it didn't kind of formulated, it's not well dissolved. Like I got kind of some graininess to it. I don't know.
Actually, for once, I disagree with Joel on the bitterness. I don't think it is that bitter. I actually think it's more sweet than bitter.
It's not that it's super bitter. It's that you can just taste the bitterness right away, which I like. It's like instant bitterness.
But it's not that bitter of a beer. There's a lot of like juicy fruit qualities to it. It is, you just take a sip of this, and it, for me, it's everything that those Northeast IPAs were, but you know, just as good
or better.
It's so balanced.
I think this beer is very refreshing. It was by far my favorite of the trip. I think the whole experience at the brewery with the owner and the executive brewer just made it that much better, and having it straight from the tank there, this was so delicious and just brings me back to that moment. It's great.
So Jeff, take us through our experience there.
Yeah, so similar situation. I mean, when we go on a trip like this, we try to reach out to some breweries and make contact ahead of time. So I got in touch with Clark, who is the owner and president of Toppling Goliath.
And how'd you get in contact with him?
Well, I just sent an email through their website and told him who we were and whatever. And the president of the company responds like the next day, inviting us for this special tour that nobody else gets to do, because where they make the beer is a different location from their tasting room. So he gave us this address. It's like out in the middle of kind of nowhere. There's no cell phone service, no GPS. So we're like looking at a map, trying to figure out how to get there. So we meet him at the brewery. It's not a huge location. I mean, they're going to expand, and we can talk about that, but it's not a huge location, but Clark's there, and he introduces us to basically everybody who works there, and he's very personable. He knows everybody very well, and we just get this grand tour, and we had, I think, three different beers right out of the tank. At least one or two were the day before they were going to bottle it, so it was, you know, as fresh as you can get. And he just showed us around the whole location where they make their beer at the current time.
Yeah, I think we had King Sue that was going to be bottled tomorrow, the day after we were there.
Yeah, we had a seasonal beer that they make in celebration of these mushrooms that grow in the local area.
Doesn't have mushroom in it.
I was going to say, was it a mushroom beer? Because that would be interesting.
No mushrooms in it. I asked that question.
I think we had a double dry hopped pseudo sue, you know, the day before they were going to bottle it. So it was an awesome experience just being there. And then, you know, so we had a few beers there, and then we drove to the new location that is under construction. Dallas, you want to talk about that place?
Yeah. So this is the first place was pretty big. They had like $500,000 they spent on the new brew house at the old location that we toured. Then he took us over to this massive project, and we walk in there, and there's construction crews putting up the pipes and stuff. And he kind of gave us a tour of this building, which is just, you know, the walls aren't even in yet. It's just the studs, and you walk from room to room, you know, on the foundation and through the holes and the studs in the walls. And he says, okay, this is going to be our kitchen, and this is going to be the employee break room, and here's our restaurant, the tap room, and how they had it planned out, where they had the indoor grain silos, because this is in, you know, the weather is not good there, so everything's indoors. Huge place for the grains to come in. It gets brewed into beer, and then the spent grain goes out the one side. On the other side of the building, they have the kegs and the packaging materials come in, they get cleaned, they get filled, and then it goes out the other side. So one side of the building, massive building, it's on like 25 acres. I don't know what they're spending, but it's millions of dollars. And they are, their name is Toppling Goliath. And you sort of get the sense that Goliath might be like Anheuser-Busch, you know, like they're growing to where they're going to take some of their share, I think. Market share.
Oh, so it's not like a Jewish thing. It's not like Jedediah and Levi were working there.
No, I mean, you don't know until you go there, but they have big aspirations. And, but it's still a kind of a real small company. I mean, we met their head brewer, really smart guy. I mean, Clark is the kind of guy you get the impression where he is good at hiring very smart people and talented people and lets them do their job. And it was a very impressive operation they had there.
Well, in this new place, it's basically designed every single aspect of it by Clark and Mike, the brewer, head brewer. And so they, you know, doesn't seem like money is an issue. It's whatever it was going to cost, they're going to spend. But they're very involved. I mean, this is the owner of the company who is involved in every little single detail of this project. And it's engineered and designed like architecturally exactly how he wants a brewery to be. And it's very efficient. And I mean, it was impressive, but it's two guys basically design everything and then they hire the people to do it.
I think to put it into perspective for the listeners, their cold storage was bigger than most breweries that I've been to. Just the cold storage alone was that expansive. Huge location.
Well, and this is a pretty small town in Iowa. I mean, we can't lose sight of that. This is one of the most, you know, famous breweries in the U.S., and it is in this small town in Iowa, but they're making incredible beer and obviously looking to grow and produce a lot more than they're making right now.
I didn't know there were big towns in Iowa.
There's not, I don't think. Not that I saw, but I think that this place is going to draw some tourist people and people looking for beer and stuff, and it's going to be a boom to the entire town. You can tell that right off the bat.
I mean, it's a destination, and we're going to go back there sometime after it opens to see what the new place is like.
Certainly. Yeah, definitely a good time. And as you can see, the beer, King Sioux, man, this is quite an impressive double IPA.
I mean, this is easily one of the best double IPAs I've ever had. I mean, it's just high quality, excellent flavor, mouthfeel. I mean, I don't think we said enough about how good this is, but it is a really awesome beer.
Jeff, you want to talk about Sioux? Where did the name come from?
No, go ahead. No, I don't know the story.
No, you go.
No, you hang up.
So one of the things that I found out while I was talking to one of the guys at the bottle shop in Chicago was letting me know that when they tried to get distribution rights in Illinois, one of the prerequisites they asked them because of the conflict with the name Sioux is that they donate to education programs in Chicago. And it's all derived from the fact that there's the most complete T-Rex skeleton at the Field Museum in Chicago. And so that's what they had asked him. And I think that's where the name is coming from the T-Rex Sioux at the Field Museum.
Yeah, the dinosaur is named Sioux.
Oh. I once heard of a boy named Sioux. The So then we finished the tour and we went to the tasting room there. Very, very small little tasting room. Maybe fits 20 people, you know? Incredibly small. And we go up to the thing and order some beers, and we had this King Sioux, and Hugo and Lance order King Sioux, and the girl that was working the counter there says, one for each of you, or are you going to share it? And Lance says, well, one for each of us. She says, are you going to be drinking any more after this? He's like, yeah, probably. So that's what leads me to believe that King Sioux is pretty potent, whatever the ABV is. But yeah, it was a huge contrast. Their current tap room is going to be dwarfed substantially by their new facility that it's going to be a year away from opening. So very cool place. So I was at the tasting room there at Toppling Goliath, and the lady at the end of the bar started up a conversation, asked where we're from or whatever. And she's like, oh, well, what, you know, while you're here, you should go next door and check out Pulpit Rock Brewery. And we didn't even know about it. It wasn't even on our radar. And so I looked it up on the map, and it's just a block away. So we walked over there, and exact contrast. You have the huge brewery, Toppling Goliath, and then there's a little local Pulpit Rock next door just for the locals. You know, just a very, very small brewery, very low production, and, you know, nice atmosphere for sure. You can just see the difference between two different sized breweries within a block of each other.
And we had a good time. I mean, Alex was working, and we became instant friends with her, and she, you know, we just hung out for a lot longer than we expected. We were probably there 2 hours just drinking beers, which meant that we drove across Iowa, Wisconsin really much later in the night than we had planned to. But, you know, we had a good time. It, not the same experience as Toppling Goliath, but they had good beers for this small place in the same town.
Yeah. So we rolled into Madison, Wisconsin about midnight, went to the hotel bar, had a drink, and then it was off to bed. Woke up the next morning, and we drove to New Glarus, Wisconsin. And New Glarus is a big brewery. There's small and there's big, and then there's New Glarus, which is maybe the 30th biggest brewery in the country. And I think they probably, based on what I could tell, produce 75% of the beer for the state of Wisconsin.
It must be that way, because the interesting thing about this is, like Dallas said, it's one of the biggest breweries in the U.S., but they only distribute in Wisconsin. So for them to be that big in terms of production, people in Wisconsin must drink a ton of this beer. And it's well known. It's one of the oldest breweries, but they drink so much of this beer across that state for this to be as big as it is.
Yeah. So just a word of warning. Normally I will arrange the beers in order from lightest to heaviest as we drink the beer. This show is ordered by the order that we went to the breweries. So we're going from a very heavy Pseudo Sioux to a very light
King Sioux.
What did I say? Oh, King Sioux. Heavy Pseudo Sioux.
Heavy King Sioux.
Heavy King Sioux.
Heavy King Sioux to a light Spotted Cow. You have to hard shifted the gears here.
So this one's like a pale yellow too. The thing that I'm noticing about it is it's got like a two-finger head that's not going away. It laces like very beautifully.
Yeah, real
on
nice,
the glass.
Real foamy. The aroma is, this is like one of my favorite aromas I've ever had ever on a beer. It's like a pastry, like a fresh pastry out of the oven, like a
strawberry streusel.
Yeah.
But isn't it very weedy? Like fresh a field of wheat?
Yeah.
It smells really good.
Very weedy, very sweet.
I knew Steve was going to like this. I mean, I don't know if he's tried it yet, but this is like their flagship beer. This is Spotted Cow. They don't put very many details on their can. I don't know what the alcohol percentage is. It's 4 or 5%. It's pretty light. It's a farmhouse ale, but at first we thought it was a pale ale, but it's kind of like a pale farmhouse ale. I don't know. I'd be curious what you guys think when you try it.
Yeah, it smells like those soft buns that you get at Logan's Roadhouse or at Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Soft, buttery, like fresh out of the oven roll.
Yeah, I think a pale farmhouse, Jeff, that's very good because it has that real slight funk to it, but then it is just, it's definitely not full-bodied. I mean, you wouldn't use that descriptor at all. It's real, almost like a light ale.
And how many different beers do they brew there? Is it like a ton? Or is this like their most famous beer, or do they have like a staple beer?
This is their most famous. This is their staple, but okay. They did brew 6 or 7 different beers that I saw.
I mean, so it was an interesting place because their tasting room, they only have like 5 beers on tap, maybe 6. And it's their tasting room is inside like a store where they serve
the gift shop.
Like a gift shop, they sell merchandise. It's not your typical tasting room by far. They didn't have any IPAs. We did notice that they had one IPA in bottles that you could buy. I'd say they probably make 12 beers, but they only had six or so on tap that we could try.
The place is huge. It looks like Solvang on the outside, like Danish village. It's like very, it's made up to look like a European.
It's Swiss. Yeah, it's like a Swiss town where this is at.
Very stucco facade everywhere. Just it was huge. I enjoyed the self-guided tour.
Right.
I think our tour guide Dallas made it enjoyable.
Yeah. So they give you a beer and for the taster, and then you walk from the gift shop, and you can just walk around the brewery yourself. You just can't go into any of the doors marked brewers
because they're locked.
We tried.
Yeah, but you can see they have big windows on every single part of the brewery, so you can see the whole operation just walking around.
I'm commenting a lot on the labels and cans today, but I'm totally digging this. It's like it's a thumbprint of the state of Wisconsin. It's a really neat design on the can, too.
I agree completely. I noticed that when I was there. They had that all over the gift shop.
It's very cool.
But yeah, the place is huge. Like, they had these barns. Like, everywhere in Wisconsin, there's barns. Everyone has a barn, a silo, and a house. The barn is always painted red. The silo is kind of a wood color, and the house is white. Well, they had a couple of barns in the back, but they weren't barns. They looked like blimp hangers. They're huge, and those are where all the brewery operations are. But outside, it looks like just a huge version of your normal Wisconsin farm.
I think Jeff had an unsuccessful mission of trying to bring over a variety of these new Glarus beers, but unfortunately, Dal kept checking the back tailgate to see if everything was properly stored, and the first
in our minivan.
Yeah, and then Jeff's beer just came spilling out. He looked very sad.
Yeah, we tried to bring back a few more beers, but a few of them broke, and we ended up chugging them in the parking lot at Tyranena
because they were squirting out everywhere, and we had to just down them.
Waste not, gentlemen.
Yeah,
but let's go back to this beer because
I want to talk about it.
I enjoy this, and I don't think I gave it enough credit at the time at the location, but I really enjoy the creamy mouthfeel on this. It almost tastes like there's lactose or something. It's a farmhouse ale that isn't really funky. It's not sour or anything like that. But this is just something I could drink all day long on a hot day. It's refreshing. It's got that really interesting creamy mouthfeel, and I like this a lot more today than I did at the brewery.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I can understand why this is like their flagship beer and it's very popular, because I think that I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who hated this beer. It's very like universally appealing. Like Jeff said, it's got a creamy mouthfeel. I wrote down for my description, it's like a creamy, malty sweetness to it. It kind of tastes like applesauce. It's fruity. It's very crisp, and like Jeff said, you know, you can drink it on a hot day and be like very satisfied with it.
I think anybody, you pull them off the street and give them a beer, and they'll like this beer, whether they like beer or not.
It's very refreshing.
I don't think anybody here would have any trouble drinking a six pack of this. I mean, it's perfect for that. You know, here's some barbecue. Here, have some beers. I mean, you could just drink them down.
Exactly.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
Comments this week. We had a rush of people signing up on the site. We had all kinds of, I can't even approve the accounts fast enough now. It's crazy how many people are signing up. On Trader Joe's Hofbräu Bock. I had the Hofbräu Bock from Trader Joe back in New York. I moved to Florida in 2011. And came back to New York and had to know they say that they don't ship this beer below Georgia. So I guess they still have it in New York. We have it here in Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's, pretty good beer selection for the money. And on Misery Bay IPA, Hyman Bar Sinister says, I just opened up a bottle that I got from the Beer Club of the Month. First impression, love it. Wonderful hoppiness, grapefruit, pine, not too sweet. I think it's lovely. Not too high on the alcohol, but it's more than consumer beers. I would buy this beer. So that is from Erie Brewing Company in Erie, Pennsylvania. Never had it before, but it's a good review for it. On our previous podcast, Oh, Buckeye Nut, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
He says, another great show. I listened to your comments and posted my first description and beer photo. I'll be in Madison the first week of June and looking forward to hitting some great breweries. I was there last year and strongly suggest hitting the following three breweries. Carbon 4, went there, very good time. Vintage Brewing, we went to that one. That was a cool place too. It was like a full-blown bar and restaurant. But their beer was good, and he suggested the Ginger Ninja. It was a ginger ale beer, which was, I really enjoyed it. And Ale Asylum, Contorter Porter. I don't know if we had Contorter Porter, but Ale Asylum was a good spot. It, very dark, sinister, red lights, good ambiance for a brewery. My opinion of the best of each of these places, enjoy the trip. Well, Rich, we did enjoy the trip, and we thank you for posting the beer of the day. Rich posted Petite Sour Raspberry, and we featured it as the beer of the day on May 11th. So it's definitely good when listeners and users of Beer of the Day post beers, because then we can feature those beers on as the beer of the day and send it out to all the followers of Beer of the Day.
Thanks, Rich.
For sure. Okay. Oh, we owe Rich a pint glass. So we'll get that in the mail, Rich. If you post a beer of the day and we feature it as the beer of the day, we'll send you a pint glass too. Just go to beerofthedaycom and click add a beer. All right, let's get into the final beer of the night. All right, it's Strange Brew time. We have from Tyranena Brewing Company in Lake Mills, Wisconsin, the Blueberry Thrill Double IPA. This was the next stop right after New Glarus. We started in New Glarus in the morning. We drove all the way back to Madison, past Madison, all the way through. And this was the next stop we had.
Hey, Jeff, you got any visible sediment in this one?
I wrote that down. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A little bit. Not as much as that beer from, was that the last show or the two shows ago?
Two shows ago.
I think Dow's glass has settled into a blueberry muffin by now.
You know, it smells a bit like a blueberry muffin. Color-wise, it's kind of reddish. Maybe some bluish hints to it. But it's a reddish. I don't know. What color would you describe this as?
Like a chunky lump copper.
And there are some serious legs on this glass from the pour. I mean, I'm guessing it's going to be syrupy. I don't know. We haven't tried it yet, but it does look like it's got some thickness to it.
It smells syrupy too, I would say. Like it smells very sweet.
Kind of an off-white foamy head. But yeah, lots of lacing on the glass, and it does smell syrupy.
It was brewed with a hill, not a cup or a large amount, a hill of blueberries.
That must be the royal measurement system.
This is a double IPA, 9%. I don't think I've ever had an IPA with blueberries in it.
I think it's extremely sweet. The double IPA would have already been sweet, and then these blueberries, very, very sweet.
You guys are mentioning, though, this one was bottled a while ago. The hops have probably faded quite a bit, huh?
I don't know. Like, the hops have faded, but the bitterness hasn't. I still think it has, like, a pretty pronounced bitter finish, but it is very sweet as well.
The thing that's interesting to me is that I expected this to be highly blueberry, and you get it on the aroma, but this is an IPA first and foremost. The blueberry is just like an added little side taste. It's not the featured presentation.
Right, and I almost, if you gave this to like 20 people and you had them taste it and not smell it, which is pretty much impossible, but anyways, if you gave this to like 20 people, I'm not sure if most people would pick out blueberry. I'm not sure if I would have.
I
agree.
I don't know. I get more blueberry than I think what you guys are getting on it. I mean, maybe it's because I know it's called what the name is and what to expect, but it's definitely in there. I mean, it's not hidden at all, in my opinion.
It tastes a bit like a blueberry puree was used. I don't know how exactly they use the blueberries in the brewing process, but it tastes a bit like a puree.
With a hill. I don't know if you missed that or not.
You probably used a tractor.
Just let them roll down the hill.
I also feel like it's malty. Like, I feel like there's, like, you know, the hops have faded a little bit. It's still bitter, but I also think that there's a very strong malt backbone that you can taste.
And did you guys go here?
We did.
So I've not had a bad beer from this place yet. And this is, by the way, I like this beer. I feel like it's well-balanced. There's no real off-putting flavors to it. It's balanced for how high the ABV is, as we'll say. What was your guys' experience like there? Were all their beers good? Because I have not had a bad beer
A lot
yet.
Of them were. So they had two different tasting flights that you could do. One was like the basic one where they do all their basic beers. And then they had like the reserved one. And the one was like 10 beers and one was 8 beers, something like that. So there was a lot of beers to try. And they lined up all the glasses and we just kind of went around the table and tried all of them, you know, rapid succession. And there was quite a few good ones. They had some really strong beers though. So it was, you know, somewhat of an adjustment on some of them.
Yeah. I really enjoyed like the barrel aged ones. I mean, they probably had close to 20 beers that we tried and 7 or 8 of them were barrel aged and they were all very smooth. I mean, we've had Dirty Old Man on a previous podcast. We have a couple more in the cellar right now that are just aging and will probably get better in time. But I really enjoyed, like, their core beers were pretty good, but I really enjoyed their barrel aged stuff.
And I have to share that they had one of the best brewery dogs I've ever experienced. Ever.
What do you mean by a brewery dog?
It's a brewery dog. It's a dog that's at the brewery.
He was pretty friendly.
Every brewery does seem to have the dog under the bar, right? I mean, that's just kind of like a staple of a brewery.
There was a lot. I can't remember the specific beers that we had that were good. I wasn't taking too good of notes at that point. But I do remember that on the podcast when we had Old Dirty Man on it.
Dirty Old Man?
Dirty Old Man. That was what?
We just keep on correcting you. I'm sorry.
It's fine. I need it. We had Dirty Old Man. That was my favorite beer of that show and possibly my favorite beer of the year. It wasn't my favorite beer of the day when I visited the brewery. They had better beers than that there.
It can't be true. Boy, it cannot be true.
No, because I had it and we tried it and it was quite good, but there was maybe 2 or 3 more that were even better.
Take me there.
I think if you do make it there, do yourself a favor and grab the premium flight. I think that's where most of those better beers that Dallas was talking about were on.
Good advice.
For sure.
But don't grab the brewery dog. It's disrespectful.
Oh, no. He's very nice.
Final thoughts on this beer.
Glad I tried it. Don't know if I'd have it again. I think the blueberries don't necessarily add too much to the beer. It's already a good beer, but I'm not sure if the blueberries make it better.
The liquid to solid ratio bothers me.
I think our beer had more sediment than your guys's.
Well, this was good. We should also mention we went back to we stayed in Madison and had a great time in Madison. So when we left Tyranina, we went to a couple more breweries. We're not having those on the show tonight, but we went to Carbon 4, which everybody recommended. You know, when you go to these breweries, we always ask, where else should we go? And everybody said Carbon 4. It's interesting spelling. It's K-A-R-B-E-N and then the number 4. They had really nice beers. And then we ended the night at Ale Asylum, which Dallas mentioned previously. So a really cool scene in Madison, up and coming beer scene. All of these towns we went to have seen incredible growth in craft beer in the last couple of years. But we had some nice beers all over the state of Wisconsin.
That Martian sunrise at Carbon 4 was pretty memorable.
Indeed.
It's a good name for a beer.
I was going to say that sounds like a fantastic mixed drink. I'll have the Martian sunrise.
It does sound good. All right. Well, that's going to conclude the first half of this episode. We're going to recap the beers we have. We'll pick a beer of the day from the first half, and then we will get moving on to the next half of the show. Britton.
So we started off the show. The boys in Pasadena did the Size 7 IPA from Steel Toe Brewing in St. Louis Park. Then we went on to Surly Extra Citra from Surly Brewing Company in Minneapolis. Then we went on to Mosaic Sour from Fair State Brewing Company, also out of Minneapolis. In the second half of the show, we did the King Sioux from Toppling Goliath in Decorah, Iowa, the Spotted Cow from New Glarus Brewing Company in New Glarus, Wisconsin, and we finished it off with the Blueberry Thrill Deepa from Tyranina Brewing Company out of Lake Mills, Wisconsin.
All right, I'm going to forego the wheel this time. Hugo goes first. Pick his favorite beer.
My favorite beer has got to be King Sioux. Just great beer.
Short and sweet. Lance.
King Sioux. Great beer.
Britton.
Mosaic Sour. Great beer. Restrained acidity. Excellent. Blew me away. I'm chasing it. I'm going to keep chasing it with sours now.
Had to get the restrained acidity.
I did. It's perfect.
If I was stuck on an island, I had to choose one beer for the rest of my life. Out of all of these, I would choose Mosaic Sour. That's my choice.
Yeah, agreed. Mosaic Sour, hands down, it was by far the best.
Mosaic Sour was quite good, but King Sioux, excellent beer. I got to go King Sioux. My style.
I guess I have the tiebreaker.
Jeff's the deciding vote.
I'm not going to go on for too long. Both of these beers, I would rate a 5 rating, which is rare for me to give a beer a 5 rating. But both of these are some of the best I've ever had from the style. But I got to go with King Sioux. It's my choice beer of the day. I'm an IPA fan at heart, and that is one of the best double IPAs I've ever had.
All right, that's going to conclude the first half of our recap of the trip to the Midwest. From there, from Wisconsin, we went down to Illinois and Indiana, and Britton and Joel were in Cincinnati, Ohio. And so we have beers from all of those states on our next program, and we will see you then. For Jeff Miller, Hugo Padilla, Lance Burks, Britton Miner, Joel Miner, Steve Williamson, I'm Dallas Helliker. You've been listening to the Beer of the Day podcast.